you got to know that if you're not hungry, somebody else is. You're going to get your lunch.
Yeah.
No, I'm to some degree, I'm a little competitive in that. Like, I'm coming for you. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
You know, I take a little bit of a fighter mentality to it. I'm ready to fight all day long.
Yeah.
You know, you said the right thing. It's going to turn, it's going to put that switch.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not to say that I'm going to unnecessarily go after people. I don't do that. I don't go after them out of my way. But this is a competition.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
It's always a competition.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of business to go around, but not for everybody.
Yeah.
And you're not going to take my family's share. That's how I look at it.
All right. And we are live. I have Nate Smoyer. He is an entrepreneur, longtime internet marketer, and he currently runs Real Team Panda, a growth marketing agency that helps funded startups to grow their business online. So, Nate, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Definitely. So, for the first question, I just want to get into, before I get into Real Team Panda, your current venture, I wanted to talk about a little bit about how you got started in internet marketing and set yourself up for the position you're in today. So, how'd you get started as an entrepreneur, and what do you do now in your current role?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm sure some people would agree with this, that entrepreneurs do, you know, like, there is some sort of starting point, but, you know, getting started or how I got started wasn't something I knew I was being an entrepreneur. I started by stealing all of the school supplies from my classmates in fifth grade and then selling them back to them because there was no school store. That's not the perfect start to, you know, to run a business, but, you know, I kind of built on that. You know, I was a paper boy, so I got that experience. I always loved when we did the fundraiser contest, so I would go out and try and sell, you know, soccer bars and all that kind of stuff as big as possible. I don't know. That's what I traced to my start, so to speak. You know, I think my first time getting my first real experience with building something meaningful. I was in high school and I started a nonprofit to found a skate park and BMX track in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me 4 years. We opened up the BMX racetrack. You know, in that process, I learned about writing grants, helped acquire some grants. I bought a skate park on Tuesday from New York to my hometown. You know, learned a lot of things in that process. It still kind of built from there. You know, I figured, well, I could do these things. You know, maybe I can run my own business.
Yeah.
You know, and I think what probably really helped was I had some people in my life who were entrepreneurs. You know, I saw the flexibility that I had to schedule. You know, my mom took tickets everywhere. But I see my friend's parents, and it's like, well, how come they always have time? And you know, they built their life. You know, they put a little more intentionality behind it. So I'm always one to do things for myself.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that part about intentionality definitely makes sense. Everyone that has a life that's enviable, I would say. But I don't think there's anyone that accidentally stumbles into a really enviable lifestyle. Let's see here.
Yeah, that might be true, but not the majority.
Yeah. Okay. It sounds like you definitely knew you wanted to be an entrepreneur from a pretty young age. What made you start out? I saw that you worked for a nonprofit, and then you worked as a marketing manager. You worked for buy sell ads, publisher management. What made you want to do all those roles prior to, you know, doing what you're doing now? Why didn't you want to just try to keep starting companies, or were you on the side?
That's a great question. So my third business, which was a marketing company, Chatterbox Marketing, started that while in college. That failure hurt. It hurt me. I had to get some things right. I had to get my money right. I had to get my mind right. So it took me a while to where I wanted to even start a company. You know, I vowed after that company closed and never started marketing company. I said, I'll never do this again. I will never start another agency. I have no interest in that. I don't want to get on that path again. Of course, that's what I do now. you know, I tried to fight it, but it's the thing about it was there was very good reasons for why that business failed, and it wasn't necessarily just me. It wasn't that I wasn't cut out for it. It wasn't because I didn't have the chops for it. You know, it was because I just wasn't mature yet. I didn't have the mentorship. I didn't have the experience. I didn't have the mindset. You know, there was a lot of things that were just missing on that early business. So, you know, I wanted to start other companies, but I just didn't have the idea of what it was going to be like. And even now, you know, Real Team Panda, where we have it now, the vision, you know, is so much bigger than what we got now. You know, I want our own apparel line. I want to bring some of that street, urban field of things in the tech. I think there's huge potential for it. I love the collaboration potential between hip hop and tech, and I want to bring that into it. I want to build a product around and we're going to build our own tools that help businesses grow. And even in that, you know, that's not the end goal. You know, for me, I look at Broken Panda as like, this is a vehicle that's going to enable me to do what I really want to do, buy real estate. And I love real estate because of the way the money works in real estate. I love the math behind it. I'm very high on utility. I'm not so good on aesthetics. Aesthetics is really where I struggle. And so for me, real estate's got great utility. You know, my first rental property, people ask, like, why did you buy this house? The numbers worked and I hated the house. There was no emotional attachment to it in the slightest. People don't understand. They were like, why would you buy a house you don't like? And you know, that one rental house actually enabled me, that's what enabled me to leave my job at BikeWise to be a realtor. And I became a realtor, which is starting a business.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be in real estate more. I wasn't satisfied with learning as much as I was learning on the sidelines. So I figured, you know, we gotta cut our teeth and get in as far as possible. So, you know, the Russian Panda's purpose for me is to build capital so that we can build our entire own real estate. And there's an end goal with that. An end goal, I don't care about how much real estate we have. It's got to be enough that supplies us the life that we've envisioned.
Yeah.
And gets me to my final destination. And the final destination for me, the final end goal, and I think it's weird, but, you know, it's all I want to do. Is I want to one day have a small breakfast diner. I want to make the eggs, the hash browns, the bacon,
yeah,
the coffee. I want to work from 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. in the afternoon. That's it. That's all I want to do.
Yeah.
And the real estate is going to enable me to fund that business, and I won't have to pay myself to work that business. And that's the ultimate for me. Is in the end, I don't want to have to pay, or I don't want to have to work for pay. I want to work. And so then I can leverage my little breakfast diner and building up something that is a place and a staple in the settlement. So that's kind of like the grand scheme of things. But to get back to the question, I always wanted to start more businesses because, you know, sometimes the timing isn't right. Sometimes mentally it's not right. Sometimes the money isn't right. You know, and it's because those things got to come along together. And when they do, you know, you got to recognize it's ready to pull the trigger. And that's what happened with Real Team Panda. Lined up, and you know, I got some great people in my life, and I talked to them about, hey, look, I'm looking at these jobs that are out there, and these clients, but I can't be put in these systems. I can't be locked down on this. I'm gonna last 3 months, and I'm gonna quit, guaranteed. And they're like, that's just, you know, my friends are telling me you can't work with me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I still do well in confinement. You know, being put into a set rigid regimen of under someone else's company, you know, it's kind of, it worked out. Somebody came together.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds like, just based on, you know, the 15 minutes we've been chatting, that you're the kind of guy that needs to be running an empire and just yeah. And I like that part about the diner too, because I like that you have this like really specific goal you're going for, you know, people always talk about, but you're not, you know, saying, oh, I have to do that now and make the money for that. Because obviously we both know a diner is not the easiest way to make a living, but it's like, if that's what you want to do, like, you're putting the pieces in place to do that with what you're doing now, which is, I think that's really interesting, because people are constantly fed the idea that they need to have some crazy vision. Like, but you're like, this is what I want. I'm going for it. I really like that.
Community focus. So, you know, when I think about it, I'm like, okay, so where do people get together that you can impact them in a big dramatic way. And we serve on coffee. And I'm from the East Coast, so, you know, we do diners on the East Coast. Whereas West Coast doesn't have any good diners. One of the things that I was so motivated about the diner is my vision.
Yeah.
You know, the diner is that thing. And so I get to be able to pull people together, right? They're having meals and talking about what's happening. I get to put the placemat in front of them.
Yeah.
Right? So for the community, put it on the placemat, I get in front of everybody. If it's 50 customers a day, that's 350 people a week.
Yeah.
And if it's in my community, right? If it's the people in my area, I like to think of like Parks and Rec, right? You know, so, you know, Leslie Nuss coming in to the Waffle Diner, right? Well, if I'm able to create an environment where other community leaders have a place to stop in and talk through what they're working on and how they're going to, you know, collaborate, you know, make sure you invite the people in that, you know, are working in the trenches of the community, then I can be a bit of a catalyst for that. I get to help facilitate those conversations that change whatever we're working towards. So I think it's I think it's a cool way of going about, you know, how do I be involved in the community? Sometimes, you know, in order to lead, I take a little bit of like a little bit of a sidestep, you know, or something that's not necessarily like, you know, I don't have to be mayor myself, although that is one of my goals in life, to be a mayor. But, you know, I don't have to be mayor myself just to lead in a town. I can run a diner.
Yeah.
And the diner thing becomes a catalyst for more.
Yeah, you can set the conditions for your community to have that environment. You can facilitate it with all your work you're doing to raise that capital. So, okay, so right now, Real Team Panda is one of your main things. I have so many questions about what you just said. I'm going to get back to some of it, but I want to give people some of the tactical stuff with how you're running the business. So, for Real Team Panda, what right now is your main channel that you're bringing in customers on? I saw you on Upwork. I know you have it highlighted on your LinkedIn. What other channels or where are you getting most of your customers?
Yeah, so we haven't done anything on Upwork for a little while now. Well, not anything. I have one client I really particularly enjoy talking to and working with, and we work with her on a monthly coaching. And then I have one content client. Outside of that, Upwork is not a channel for us anymore. I started with Upwork because we had moved from Washington to Tennessee. I had literally just pulled and walked away from my real estate business. And it was like, all right, well, so, you know, can't just say I'm not going to make no money. So I was like, well, we're going to figure some stuff out. And I figured, you know, while I'm looking at these jobs that are out there, well, I'm going to just pick up some side work. And it started that way. That's how it started. And I figured out really fast, what I was not going to want to do and what I don't like. You know, even before I was 18, I think I had like something like 20 jobs. Because I just quit stuff that I didn't like. And it keeps moving, you know, and that saves everybody money and time, by the way. If you don't like the job, you need to quit the job. It's just fair. You know, if you're not mentally there, you need to quit. That's why I left.
It's like a bad relationship. You're like, if it's not working, save everyone time. I love it.
Like when I was at the software company, I was just back from my honeymoon. We were back 4 days. 4 days. Right? I made it to Thursday morning. I texted my wife. I said, babe, I think I need to quit my job. Right? And we talked the night before, and it was like, okay, somewhere down the line, you know, I'm going to be making a move here. And, you know, she replied with, well, you know, let's, you know, prepare for launch. If I talked about, I was going to do a launch campaign for when I quit my job one day. I thought she meant go ahead and quit. So I went upstairs and quit. Now, I gave them 2 weeks. Like, I didn't just walk out, right? Yeah. I went up and said, hey, look, you know, actually 15 days from now is going to be my last day. After 5 years, with no warning, I just said, I'm done. And the reason was I was mentally not there. I was checked out. I was mentally checked out. I was thinking about a lot of other stuff. My mind wasn't right on that. And, you know, it come to a close. You know, every Weinstein has its day, and that's how I looked at it. So, you know, it was just important to make that shift of, you know, hey, I gotta leave on that. So, but anyway, so, you know, I know I digress here. So the source of business is not Upwork. I do a lot of outbound effort. That's how I get my clients.
Yeah.
It seems crazy, but cold email. Look, you gotta identify.
Most underrated tool in the world. I'm a huge fan here. I love it.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, one of my clients is HousingWire.com.
Yep.
And it started with me sending an email to the CEO, asking a pretty pointed question. And then, I in the email, I dove into why I was answering that question. Because I looked at what they were doing, and I saw an opportunity, and I saw something that they weren't doing, and I saw something I knew that if I was on the inside, I knew how to capitalize on that.
Okay.
And so we're doing it. You know, we're not even a month in. I think we've added something like 2,000 people to the email list. A little bit more than a month in on that project. And we've grown one of the email lists by 2,000 people or so. And this is simply just me just, okay, we're going down the list of factors. We haven't even hit the big stuff yet. We're proving and validating some ideas.
Yeah.
And once we validate the ideas completely, then it moves to scale. And that's really what that's what I do. I help people if you got to get to the validation stage, right, you got to get to the point where we know the ideas that you have are really true and they work, okay, consistently. That's where you have a system, right? Yeah. That's a business model. And then from there, we can scale growth.
Yeah.
And I always like to use the analogy where people are like, hey, I want to start doing Facebook ads. I'm like, well, tell me more about this business. Well, I don't really know how many sales we're doing. Like, well, I don't want to do Facebook ads.
Yeah.
They're like, what do you mean you don't want to do it? You know, even if they're willing to pay me, I don't care, because if you get in the car and you start driving, I don't care if you go 50 miles an hour, you go 80 miles an hour. If you go in the wrong direction, you only scale your problem.
Yeah.
So there's some learning phases, of course, that you'll have to go through, and you can leverage advertising for that, but there's other channels that often make more sense. And so, you know, we optimize all these other channels to make sure that we can validate ideas and then we scale it. And that's where the gross marketing really comes through. That's what it's all about. Understanding the model and then scaling. And we find the best channels to scale it. And it doesn't matter if it's Facebook, it's AdWords, it's LinkedIn ads, you know, I'm doing all those. I haven't found the right client for Quora ads, but I think Quora's got great potential. I use it. I've been able to capture leads at ridiculously low prices.
Yeah.
We're talking like under 2 cents a lead.
Yeah.
And, there's a lot of opportunity for a lot of different people there. But,
No, you're good. So to recap, I mean, it sounds like you're saying that you're approaching these like small and medium sized businesses that are usually backed companies with, you know, a lot of employees. They're fairly large. We're not talking about solopreneurs, fairly large companies, but, you know, not enterprise level. And you're going to them and, you're sending them an email. I'm the CEO of Real Team Panda. I run a growth marketing company, and this is what we can do for you. And you're sending them a specific question and suggestion about, very specific question and suggestion about his business.
Right. Yeah. Usually, I don't really spend a lot of time introducing myself, and I think that I follow the advice of people like Ryan O'Hara at Lead.Q or Heather from Sales Folk on cold email etiquette and best prospecting practices. But not to get too technical into that, but basically, I find something specific and I hit them up and say, here's this thing and I can solve this problem for you. And what I'd love to do is, if you've got 15 minutes, I'd love to show you, and that's very important. I'd love to show you, what I think I could do for you. And if you're solving someone's problem and you can tell them at least you identify the problem and they know they have that problem and they need to solve that problem, someone's going to give you 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And when you say, this is great. Another question I was going to get into is what do you do in terms of discovery calls and sales calls? So if you're saying to some CEO, I'm going to show you your problem, is your next step then jumping on a screencast and showing them where on a site you're going to do something, or what your process actually is to build out one of the changes you're going to make to one of his, landing pages, sales funnels, et cetera?
Along those lines, I mean, essentially it's a needs analysis call. I'll try to keep it under 30 minutes, briefly.
Yeah.
And if we go anywhere, if we just determine that we think we want to move forward after that, then the next step is that we set up a proposal. You know, I'll put together a proposal. I typically will mock up a sample campaign if we're doing ads. We'll go through that proposal, what that looks like. And we'll discuss the terms of a contract that I'd like to propose, and then we'll go from there. And if it resonates with everyone, we sign on the spot. We determine a start date. Boom, we go.
Yep. Nice. That's awesome. And that's awesome. Thank you. And then for your team, I think anyone out there, I know there's a lot of solopreneurs, freelancers that are doing their own work like this as individuals. But I think there's a lot of people who aren't sure how to then start trying to hire a team. So how did you decide you were not going to do this as, you know, an individual solopreneur, freelancer? How did you hire your team? Where are you finding those people?
Well, we're still in that process. So yeah, we're still going through this. You know, it starts with hiring subcontractors on projects.
Yeah.
You know, we want to bring my wife in on the business. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it has to make a certain sense. And that's a total shift in her career. She's not a marketer yet, you know. And it's funny, she's been going through some things. And, she's like about, you know, 10 times smarter than I am. And that's not about my wife, that's a real girl. And, you know, she was kind of quizzing me. She goes, hey, you don't have this thing, you don't have this thing, you don't have this thing. I'm like, no, I don't. I do need to pull those things together. You're absolutely correct.
That's awesome. Like, that's awesome.
Drill sergeant on me. You know, so, but the reason why we're going to go bigger than just solopreneur,
yeah,
is our vision is bigger than that.
Yeah.
You know, I want to take other people with me. I love the whole concept behind Real Team Canada is team.
Yeah.
It's the whole idea behind it is team. You know, I've thrived, everything I've ever thrived in is because of a team.
Yeah.
You know, when I was little and we played football, you know, we arguably had some of the best squads Pennsylvania's ever seen. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was doing the nonprofit for building skate parks, we had, you know, we had some core people help pull that off. When I ran a concert series with some other folks, we had about 100 core volunteers. When I tried to break my first world record, I had a core of volunteers. When I've worked in even with marketing projects, right? You do a big product launch. You know, I've been a part of several 7-figure product launches. And you need a core group of people to lead that. And so when I even started leading my own marketing team, I had 7 people on my team while also doing my own project. Okay, it was a lot to handle. But it was the best. Because, you know, we'd have our stand-ups in the morning and go through all what we're going to go through, you know, try and accomplish for the day. And, you know, we just fed off each other.
Yeah.
And I had a team of, you know, what I would describe almost like misfits, and I'll say that disparagingly.
Yeah.
But like we really were. Like I had internal ad networks, we were running OpenX. I had all of our paid acquisitions. You know, I had content providers, partnerships, social media. You know, I was running an ad marketplace. None of us actually helped like directly work with the other. We were service providers for other brands in house.
Yeah.
That's the way we were essentially looked at. We were an internal agent.
Yeah,
that's how we operated, and but it was great. And I remember for the 2015 when we started pulling that team together, and I came up with the idea to say, hey, this year we're going to operate on simple principles, and it was being service oriented and growth minded. We were service-oriented. Everything that we did was designed to service and serve other brands and campaign managers in-house.
Yeah.
We were the reason their campaigns were going to succeed. And everything we did was not only for the purpose of campaign growth, but it was for our channel growth. We were responsible for growing our channel. So if you came to us with a lame duck campaign, we had to give you the rubber stamp of no.
Yeah.
And because it wasn't going to grow our channel. And it wasn't going to be the best use. So kind of like in real estate, the highest and best use of that real estate. That's how we looked at it and we approached it. And so now I get the opportunity to actually take this out and give this to many different companies. And I want to bring other people in on with that.
Yeah.
So I think the vision is big on what I want that to look like and how many people I want to take with us. So I have to go outside myself. I can't just keep it myself.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense, especially after that team experience. And that was when you were at Buy Sell Ads.
No, that was when I was at Faith Life.
Faith Life, okay. When you guys were running all for those different companies, so, that's interesting. It sounds like you took a lot of what you learned from there and incorporated into Real Team Panda.
Well, yeah, I mean, even the name Realty Panda. So, you know, internally, it started with how do we scale me? Because I had built up our social media program, and then I had started building up our partnership program and totally formed that and do that. And then I started taking over paid advertising, and I couldn't possibly do all these things at scale. And so the only way to grow it was to find other people who take those jobs, and then I could take on, you know, the next thing. And so it started as partnerships and advertising, which is all about Panda.
Yeah.
And the Real Team Panda is kind of a play on internet terms. I set up a Slack group for us, and someone had taken Team Panda. So yeah. I set up Real Team Panda because it's Real Team Panda. I don't care what anybody says, right? This is the official, right? This is
so, the real.
When it came time when I decided I was going to start a business, I just went back to what I like.
Yeah.
And people love pandas. The truth is, look, people love cats and people love dogs, but people also hate cats and people hate dogs.
Hard not to love.
I've never seen anybody go to San Diego View and not waste half hour watching pandas sleep. Everybody does it.
Yeah.
San Diego View is expensive. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
And when you go there and all you get to do is see the pandas sleep, but everybody does it. So I love the idea that people love pandas. It's very brandable. It's very memorable. It's an opportunity for me to demonstrate creativity. You'll never see me just say my services creative. I won't do it.
Yeah.
And David Oakley says, don't do it. So I won't do it. I let him be my boss on that one. But, you know, so I have to demonstrate it.
Yeah.
And so that's why I thought it was a good opportunity. You know, for real estate one day, more properties will be a thing. And for me, that makes sense in real estate. But when it comes to being a marketing company or consulting or NS marketing or something like that, I thought that was stupid.
Yeah.
And I really don't like, you know, marketing companies that, you know, have someone's last name and don't have a brandable personality behind it. So I had to come, I felt like I had to come up with something and build something that could be fun and expressive and kind of, in a way, you know, mirror who I am and how do I build that into a brand. So that's what our template is on that.
No, that makes sense, especially for something like a growth marketing firm where the entire industry is based on testing things, a little uncertainty. It's like if someone has a growth marketing company that sounds like it's a law firm, it doesn't really match, it seems like. And anyone, too, who's doubting, you know, street cred based on the Panda name, you know, to switch topics, how did you get a picture with Mark Zuckerberg? Talk about street cred on your LinkedIn. That's an amazing photo. How did you get that photo?
Oh man, I haven't seen Mark in a while.
good old Mark.
All right, so here's the shortened version of that story.
Yeah.
Certain details I am not allowed to disclose.
Okay.
Basically, I noticed that the PR game with Mark Zuckerberg was on point for a while, and I wanted to set it up where I would comment on one of his statuses. He would reply back to me because every once in a while he does that to 1, 2, 3 comments. And this was back in 2016, I think, when he was really, they were amping up Mark's public presence. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to get him to comment back to me. And then I'm going to screenshot that. And then I'm going to post that and be like, this just happened, right?
Yeah.
And then I'll get, you know, 100, you know, some likes on it. And I'm just going to keep demonstrating that I'm the best in the social game.
Yeah.
So anyway, I turned on notifications. I started commenting on posts. And then I started consciously thinking, what are things that I could serve up as a softball that he could answer that helped him with his agenda? This is an agenda behind the PR game.
That's really good. Yeah.
So if you want to win that, you got to understand their agenda and then help them accomplish the agenda.
So, anyway, so you were trying to like reverse engineer what his PR people wanted him to respond with and serve up a softball for that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So he did a post. They were doing a town hall meeting at Facebook and said, you know, can't make it in person, ask the question here. And, you know, maybe we'll get the answer to your question during the meeting. And so I posted, I said, what's your vision for Facebook becoming a platform for education in the future? Because I don't know about you, but Blackboard is time to go. It's time to go. We could just run Facebook groups for online education.
Yeah.
You could scrap Blackboard tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's going to miss that. You know, I got tired of having to teach teachers on how to use that. Yeah. I went to a school where they were asking me to submit Word 2004 documents or something like that, you know, and it was what, 2008.
Yeah.
Y'all gotta get new words. I'm not sending you this old stuff. They didn't know what Google Docs was. And that's too prevalent in education. I'm an English professor behind. That's how I feel about it. I'm not gonna get on my horse about college. But that is. So anyway, I served that softball up, and then PR team from Facebook hit me up and said, hey, we love your question, we'd love to talk to you about it. And I think we'd love to have you down here to ask Mark in person. So, true story, first live stream Facebook from Mark's page. Man is on that video, I think somewhere like 5 or 6 minutes in, I forget where I'm at. But I got to ask Mark my question in person, and then he answered me in person, and then afterwards he got a photo with him. And so that, at the time, that was my girlfriend, but she, you know, now we're married. So it was great. We were both able to come down for that. So that was. It was a dream experience.
That's awesome. That is a dream experience. And this was because of that comment he had responded to, that you got the invite to go to the live event?
Well, he never responded to it on Facebook. I never got the screenshot of him commenting back to me on Facebook.
Yeah.
What I got was video of him talking to me in person.
Oh, okay.
And then just a photo was after that town hall event. So,
oh, how did you get to the town hall event? How did you get to that?
Airplane.
Oh, okay. Okay. And they paid for that? You just went out when you were out visiting?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's certain details I can't go into.
Oh, okay. Okay, I forgot that you had said that. That's why there's a disconnect. Yeah, there's certain things. That is an awesome one, though. Okay, so moving away from that, I just got a couple more questions. So for people that want to start their own thing and they, you know, are thinking about it, looking at a lot of these jobs they can get, what would you suggest is needed? I mean, like, to give you an example, I think internet marketing and growth marketing is, you know, people can learn one specific skill quickly and start freelancing with that. But what would you suggest to people either to start as a freelancer or to eventually do what you want to do? What do you think is the fastest way to get there?
Well, being T-shaped, not familiar, is extremely helpful. You have a wide range of knowledge and then one very deep specialty. That goes a long way. For a long time, I've advocated for being I've always claimed the title of specializing and generalizing. Look, I can talk to you SEO. I know how to use Search Console. I understand keyword strategies and content strategies. I know how to set up AdWords campaigns. I know how to set up and put in place all your Facebook pixels. I can use referral growth marketing tools. I can get your Google Analytics with goal conversions going. I know how to get your automation running with active campaigns. I can build up your entire sales enablement, 8 emails long, you know, 2 different versions, each with an A and B subject line. I can build your landing pages, you know, all that kind of stuff. But what's the one thing? What's that T-shape, right? And the reason for the T-shape, you do all those things. People are like, that's cool. I don't know how I can use you.
Yeah.
It's now paralysis. It's a choice of paradox. A paradox of choice, I think is what that is. You know, it's too much, right? So a lot of times, the reason to be T-shaped is that it helps other people understand what you can do when you need it. You leave people guessing what you can do, which is, you know, we can do everything. Well, you know, that's good, you can, but you got to tell people that with that one thing. So I think that becoming a good T-shaped marketer sets you up really well to start. And you can build on that. It don't matter if you do it for a company, do it for freelance, do it for free. But the most important thing is you got to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It don't matter. You got to do it. You know, so if you can't get someone to pay you to do it, go do it for free. You can't get someone to let you do it for free, pay someone to do it. You have to go do it.
Yeah.
I don't have experience. It's the dumbest excuse ever. Mm-hmm. There's no reason for that. You can get experience doing anything, anywhere. You just have to want it. You have to literally just do it. That's what it comes down to. Look, I've told people this in the past. If you're a designer and no one will hire you to build out a brand, you need to start making brands out of thin air. If you're a writer and no one will hire you to start to write blog posts, you need to start writing. I don't care if you build a fake company. You can do a fake marketing company and write a fake case study.
Yeah.
And just say, look, I don't have the data to work with, but I've built this case study. And I thought it seems pretty realistic based on this research. I know conceptually how to do this. I need the experience in doing it. Can I do this for you?
Yeah.
Somebody's going to hire you to do that. And it's going to suck on the pay. Pay is going to suck.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely agree with you there. I did the same thing for my first marketing job. It was a fourth of what I was getting paid. Not exciting. Okay. That's pretty good. We're pretty far in. I've taken up a lot of your time. I don't want to take any more. I really appreciate it. My last question is there anything that I did not ask you that I should have, or anything that you'd like to, you know, suggest to people that want to get into growth, want to run a growth team, are looking for a different line of work to get in, anything?
Yeah, you gotta be hungry. I mean, at the end of the day, you gotta be hungry. There's just no way around it. I don't think people realize like how, but a lot of people say like it's easier to start a business than ever before. That's true. It is so hard to thrive as a business. It's so hard. Look, there's some people out there that are so smart, and you did the hard work in school, and you're going to get an Ivy League education, and there's some companies that are going to want to hire you for that. That's dope, man. I can never compete with you. When the SATs were only out of 1,600, I think I got like a 960 the second time I took it. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're talking, my brain is like a brick absorbing water. It ain't that, right? It's
not okay. Yeah.
Okay? I want you to imagine a puddle, put a brick in it, and see how fast that puddle goes away. That's my brain.
Yeah.
So for me, the way I beat people is work.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a little bit of a mule in a digital world.
Yeah.
But you gotta understand, you can be as smart as you want. But see, I looked at it like this. I didn't get to college until I was 22, right? So I did a 2-year degree in 2.5 years, or a 4-year degree in 2.5 years, right? So I wasn't until, no wait, that's 22, yeah. So I graduated when I was like almost 25.
Yeah.
So 25, and all my counterparts are like 3 years into this career. I'm looking at everybody like, man, I'm so far behind.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's so far ahead of me. And to put on top of that, and I'm going to say, I went to a piss-poor school.
Yeah.
Right? So they didn't teach me nothing. What I learned was I needed to read on my own to learn.
That's a good lesson to learn, though. You know? That's a good lesson.
That's a statement.
Yeah.
Right? But here's what I did know. I did know that the growth trajectory of people was slow. I knew that some people would hit that middle management, would even hit that full management level, and they would become complacent.
Yeah.
They become fat and lazy, right? The hunger would be fully met, and they would just sit back and chill, right? They got the house payment. They got the car payment, right? They're going on their vacations 2 times a year. And what other people didn't realize, I think, with me, you know, when I ended up from the time I was 27 till 30, I had a 3-year time period. I did 6 to 8 years of work. And that's why I was able to double my salary twice.
Yeah.
I doubled my salary twice.
Yeah.
That's why I was able to buy investment property, which gives me passive income. And I mean, it's good passive income.
Yeah.
So you got to be hungry to do those things. And the reason I'm hungry and I feel the urgency on it is because I know what my 30-year vision is. And it's not 30 years out. It's only 20 years out. And that 20 years out is going to come so fast. Come so fast. And if I don't do it, I all the potential I have, I'll let that slip away. And I just feel I have a moral responsibility to that potential.
Yeah.
So if you want it, you've got to be hungry for it, because your days just suck. There's just no way around it. You know, and, you know, I always look back on, like, my hometown, which is a terrible little place. And,
Where is it? Can you give us the names or no?
Not say Pottstown, Pennsylvania, founded 1752 on the Pottsgrove Manor, right on the Manitonian and Schuylkill River. You know, it's a drug-ridden, crime-ridden, poverty-stricken, broken home, typical low-income, formerly industrial leader town.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, that's the opportunity wasn't there. So you get the opportunity when you didn't always have it, I think you have a greater appreciation for it. And so you got to know that if you're not hungry, somebody else is. You're going to get your lunch.
Yeah.
No, I'm to some degree, I'm a little competitive in that. Like, I'm coming for you. I don't care who you are. You know, I take a little bit of a fighter mentality to it. I'm ready to fight all day long.
Yeah.
You know, you said the right thing. It's gonna turn. It's gonna put that switch.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not to say that I'm gonna unnecessarily go after people. I don't do that. I don't go after them out of my way. But this is a competition.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
It's always a competition.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of business to go around, but not for everybody.
Yeah.
And you're not gonna take my family's share. That's how I look at it. You're not gonna take my family's share. So, I mean, that's the only thing I like to, you know, I think about and think is important for people to think about is, you know, you gotta know what's your source of hunger, like what's gonna push you through that, because on the days it sucks, willpower, man, you gotta find it. It's not just sitting there by your side. So, I mean, that's it. That's the only thing I would say, and just gotta do it.
Okay, so for this video, that's going to be it. Nate was talking to me out of his truck, and his phone actually overheated on the dash of his truck while we were talking, so we had to cut it there. But I think we hit all the most important points, and I plan to do a follow-up with Nate in 3 to 6 months. So thank you for watching.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.